penal code solves that by saying if having control over the disposition of services of others.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could it could be argued that the that the paving crew guy works a 5-day week.
Yeah, and you're using
him on Sunday.
Well, you're not employed on Sunday.
But he knows darn well that if he doesn't go out there with his foreman, he's going to be fired Monday.
He won't be employed on Monday.
Right.
Can you get around that if you simply said that he has control over labor, business, commercial enterprise, or whatever, and knowing he's not entitled to the use thereof? Doesn't that cover the question that they may be either in the employment of someone else or being put in a position of volunteering their labor or being a person like an inmate? They don't have to be employed by somebody. It's just that he knows he hasn't got the right to the use of their services at the time and place he's trying to do.
On the other hand, though, if you get your neighbor who is your friend one day to come over and help you with your garden, then you get mad at him.
But
you have no control over his services, really. That's purely voluntary, isn't it?
What was your suggested amendment, Kathleen?
I was thinking that that phrase, in the employ of another person, might be dropped if he has control over labor, or a business, commercial, industrial equipment or facility, knowing that he's not entitled to the use thereof. It doesn't really matter. If he owns them, he's entitled to the use of them. If the property is someone else or the corporation that he's converting or something, it's acknowledged that he's not entitled to the use of them, then maybe the crucial issue.
The phrase in the employee of another person may be unnecessary.
Sure.
Michigan uses the same broad language as Model Penal Code has.
Yeah.
What was that language again?
The Model Penal Code, or having control over the disposition of services of others.
I kind of like that.
Isn't that really a little bit broader?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that covers labor, business, commercial. Except, of course, it doesn't cover equipment or facility, does it?
Yeah.
Strike in the employ of another person, can't you? And leave everything else that it is empty accomplishment.
Has you control over the disposition of services? Well, what about this? Having control over the disposition of services, equipment, or facilities of others, to which it is not entitled. Having control over the disposition of services, equipment, or facilities of others to which he is not entitled. He knowingly
services, labor, equipment. You have to strike labor down below here, including services. I'm a little bit on the last line.
Well, I'm trying to figure out.
Well, I thought labor should be in there, and business, commercial, or industrial equipment or facilities. I thought that was better than just saying over the disposition of services.
What do you do when you get into the realm of the professional person? you run into a thematic problem as far as the doctor, for example, theft of services from the doctor by using the expression labor.
I think you do when you have a definition of services in the same paragraph which separates labor and professional, makes labor mean something different than professional services.
Well, we're not, so we're really excluding. We're not, in sub B, we're not using the expression services anywhere, are we?
We're taking care of services in sub A, aren't we?
Well, and then services is defined down in paragraph 2.
Well, so we exclude services from consideration B.
Well, it didn't seem to me that services were the except services as it included labor, you see, would be a problem that needed to be dealt with by sub 1, or by 1B. This language, as I indicated, comes from the New York Code, and their commentary indicates that this is offense included for the purpose of plugging an apparent gap in the present case pointed out by the decision of People versus Ashworth. The defendants therein, Mill Superintendent and his brother, were convicted of grand larceny as a result of having made unauthorized, personally profitable use of mill machinery, facilities, and labor to spin a substantial quantity of wool for a certain company. The judgment was reversed on the ground that the corrupt use of the mill's facilities and labor did not constitute a theft of property, and hence did not give subject to larceny. Subdivision 7, which is part 1B, render such conduct a theft of services. So it was designed to get at a specific type of problem. Not intended to cover professional services, but and frankly, it didn't occur to me that there would be a situation, although there might be, where you have someone who has control over professional services and diverts it to his own use. I can't think of anything
offhand. Well, the thing that it seems to me like this is an extremely dangerous provision. I assume that there are many instances where employees of some company or employer do take advantage of their opportunity to use the machinery or a truck or whatever it may be of an employer. But there are also so many instances in which this is done and we accept it as just a commonplace way of life. I have a neighbor that's a purchasing agent for company. He says, I get you a lawnmower wholesale. You'd like it? Well, that truck will get it made up to you tomorrow. We do this constantly. I suppose technically he's guilty of violating this act.
Yeah, or somebody who
is
the president and sole owner of a corporation says, go ahead and use our truck today.
Right. And there's lots of branch managers that, I had a branch manager, one of the plants here, that he had picked up some things in California at a very low price, of course, what you pay here. And he showed them to me, he said, if you like this, I'll have our truck pick you up and bring it up to you. And he did. In a few days, it was delivered to my house. You give no thought. I assume that probably this is part of this man's goodwill authority.
Or it may be recognized as a something in how you interpret the extra monetary remuneration.
Yes.
Kind of thing. The ability to buy things on sale or whatever.
It's a thing that's so constantly used. I was wondering if maybe under the other part of the theft thing, there would be some way that it could be added in, the kind of thing that was described in this case, that within, conceivably, the definitions of theft or
You mean what we've already passed along?
Right, right. In some way that could include the unauthorized or fraudulent use of some other person's equipment or facilities or labor or... In other words, it's kind of like the question that we have involved in a case now is in receiving stolen property, where a man takes a rented car and then he turns it over to another person. Is stolen property sufficient to include property obtained by embezzlement? And they say there that larceny is not sufficient. The term of larceny doesn't mean this kind of a situation. And I was just wondering if there was any way that, by definition, theft could be made to include this kind of a situation that would avoid the hazards of this kind of a generalized use of services.
Now, I have a section in here in this draft on misapplication of property, which would cover the situation where a person possesses personal property of another, but that's limited to a rental agreement, that type of thing, similar to your situation here, where he would loan it out to somebody else. And say you rent a car and you're supposed to return it at a certain time, and you take that car and loan it to someone else. This would be covered under misapplication of property.
What section is that?
This is section, the third section of page 11.
I wonder if there's a need at the present time for the inclusion of this particular type of section in our criminal law. I can think of when I was authorizing complaints in the district court and the police station, and every once in a while you get an employer that generally in a small type of business that got mad at one of his employees and wanted to prosecute him. And I'd always, generally always, refuse to complain and find out later that they were back together again. But do you think this would lend itself possibly to an abuse?
I wonder whether there isn't a really large abuse taking place right now. The case of the purchasing agent, I think, is not necessarily unique.
No,
but it's where a great deal of this sort of thing goes on. The purchasing agent is usually the wealthiest man in the corporation when things all wind up. He has a way of obtaining gravy in a lot of ways. And I just wonder if he should be able to do that, because he's using facilities that corporations, for instance, have a lot of investors, and there are a lot of people who are, to measure, defrauded by this. He's getting something for nothing. I don't care how amiable he is or what, but God, he's really using the corporate setup, let's say, to obtain a lot of things for himself that aren't necessarily just fringe benefits. He's doing something that no one else can do, and I can get it for you wholesale as a common thing. Doggone it is, but sometimes these fellows really do anything around it.
Is it the responsibility of the corporation to police itself in that respect, or is it the responsibility of the state to proscribe it by criminal sanction?
Well, of course, it's completely secret. If the corporation knows about it, sure, they can fire it. They don't like what he's doing. If it's completely secret and it becomes a big thing, I don't know, maybe they can't just satisfy everyone with firing.
We had the situation in Portland a year or so ago involving the Fred Meyer situation. You had something to do with that. Of course, that involved taking of items.
Stealing them,
subject to a larceny statute.
Yeah.
We had a case come up in Lane County one time, and there was a one of the logging companies there had a driver who they found out had been using a company truck, a log truck, to haul logs on his own. And it wasn't a question of stealing the logs or anything like that. I mean, he was legitimately hauling the logs, and he had a right to do that. I mean, these weren't company logs that he was selling on his own, but he was using a company truck to haul them on his own time. And,
I can think of, for instance, in my own case, I worked at not an hourly rate. I'm paid by the hours I turn in. I get such a, so much of a certain percentage for that. And I've signed a non-competitive agreement with my employer. Would I be committing some sort of larceny from my employer if I took individual assignments and processed them in my spare time and took the full board instead of a percentage? That's what I take. Would that be a theft of sorts? It might be stopped by this statute.
It'd be more of an OMFP problem.
Yeah, and in your example there, you'd be diverting your own services, say, more than anything else.
Diverting services, though, that I'm really supposed to supply to my employer.
You got to clear the room, and excuse me, and I'll be right back.
Do you want to take a break for about 5 minutes?
You want it? If you want it?
Yeah. 1A. Certainly this B was not was intended to cover a specific area and a specific type of problem.
And that's why you'd leave the word in the employ of another in.
This is a departure from anything we have now, whereas 1A is not. 1A is just a consolidation or attempt to consolidate a number of problems that are covered by several different statutes now.
I think this.
If we're disturbed by 1B, certainly we could have a theft of services section without any provision with respect to the diversion of plant facilities and that type of thing.
I think if we limit it to labor, I think we're all right. I can see where we're in trouble.
Well, it isn't limited to labor. It includes equipment and facilities.
But you say that if we limit it strictly to labor and
labor, equipment, and facilities, not and then leave services out of it, because we really aren't a gray area between services, actual services.
Well, then he has left services now.
Yeah, I think it's wrapped up.
Yeah, but we were talking about putting them back in.
Yeah, we were talking about putting them back in.
I was.
Yeah. I'm sure see a need for that. I got it. It definitely has a problem.
Well, we read it. Control over labor. Why don't, could you say, the person commits that they have having control over labor, equipment, or facilities of another. He knowingly diverts such labor, equipment, or facilities to his own use or the use of the third person.
What is labor of another?
Another's. Well, the situation about the work gang or whatever.
Yeah, but labor is the laborer's effort.
That's the reason I said that's the way I suggest it.
It's a little awkward.
Well, I'm not necessarily opposed to what you're getting at. Question whether it's needed. I had another question When we get down, you know, the fourth and fifth line where we talk about to derive a commercial or other substantial benefit, there, how do you define that? That's the question that I have. Right, now I recognize New York uses that. The Model Penal Code skirts it. Michigan.
Now they skirt it, although the Model Penal Code says in its commentary that, and this was commentary to a section which read, a person commits theft if having control over the disposition of labor or service of others to which he is not entitled, he diverts their labor or service to his own benefit or to the benefit of another not entitled thereto.
That was in preliminary draft.
Yeah, that was in draft, preliminary draft number 2, and their commentary indicates that they say, subsection 2 deals with the case where services paid for by another person, by one person rather, are diverted without his consent to the benefit of some other person not entitled. The subsection limits liability to misappropriation of services available for hire in order not to make criminal such common and harmless episodes as securing the loan of a friend's automobile by misrepresenting the purpose of the trip. I think their commentary begs the question a little bit, but I think that our section, the New York section, is a lot more specific and a lot clearer than the Model Penal Code. It's the type of situation you're trying to prohibit.
Has New York section been in existence long enough to have any reported cases under it defining or helping to clarify?
Not kind of aware.
Well, what's the wish of the committee with regard to B? I think we only so clearly see again today, as we did in our 3 or 4 meetings on the first section, that it's almost impossible to come up with a final acceptable draft in one meeting. We have to throw it around here, make the changes, go over it again,
well, I think
a couple more times.
I think Justice Wilson's objection to it's well taken. I had attempted, and I felt that we did, with this language, limited to flagrant abuse with the language of commercial or other substantial benefit to avoid trying to apply this to the harmless or picky type of situation where nobody really, maybe somebody is diverting some property of another, but it's in such a minor way that nobody is really damaged to the extent that the criminal law should take cognizance of it. But perhaps this language is not specific enough to do that.
You know, the Supreme Court of Oregon one time held that 5 cents was a substantial benefit.
Was it 6 cents?
Well, it may have been, but at least they held it was not on minutes.
Judge Bologna, in whose court they can come in on the evidence, did that kind of instruction on what was a nominal. In the verdict,
5 cents would have been a nominal verdict.
He said 6 cents.
Well, shall we move on and
it seems to me I leave out the words in the employ. The first line. Having control over labor of another person. Does that change it?
Having control over labor of another person, comma, or of business, commercial, or industrial equipment or facilities of another person, or a business, commercial, or industrial equipment or facilities of another person, knowing that he is not entitled to the use thereof, with intent to derive commercial or other substantial benefit for himself or a third person, he uses or defers to the use of himself or a third person such labor, equipment, or facilities. Well, that reads all right. And I think what we've been hung up on principally is the policy question of whether we want to go this route. Let me make the suggestion, if the amendment is acceptable, that we adopt it, that we go ahead and that we come back to it in our next meeting on this section. Because we could argue all day on it. Is that acceptable? From a drafting standpoint, Kathleen, would it be better to have the definition at the outset rather than the second section?
Well, I'm going to be inclined to say either first or last, but not the middle.
Okay.
And I think you used the pattern into a non on receiving where you put that in the section, you know, the only in the section which is used, except for putting it first rather than second.
Okay. That little technical change.
We can just transpose three for two.
Mm-hmm. You could transpose one for two or three for two. Say, when we went over draft four at the full commission, didn't we put the definition back in receiving?
Yes.
Section six?
Yes, we did.
And that redone draft.
You don't have it.
We don't have it yet. All right. Okay, well, let's go into your definition.
All right. Services includes, but is not limited to, labor, professional services, transportation, telephone services, the supply of accommodations in hotels, restaurants, or elsewhere, entertainment, the supply of equipment for use, and the supplying of commodities of a public utility nature, such as gas, electricity, steam, and water. Now, this is a definition that encompasses part of the Model Penal Code definition. The Model Penal Code defines services, includes labor, professional service, transportation, telephone or other public service, accommodation in hotels, restaurants, or elsewhere, admission to exhibitions, use of vehicles or other movable property. Yes. could have accommodations, although, say, hotel might be interpreted to mean a motel, or a trailer park, for example. You could have services supplied there, which you're supposed to pay, that you don't.
Or a picnic.
Now, entertainment is language from New York. The Montana Code uses in addition to exhibitions.
Entertainment covers that.
Yeah.
Supply of accommodations or elsewhere covers the stable keeper, dog pound situation. But what about the toll bridge situation? Is that covered? We have a specific section now.
Well, it's not limited to whichever.
Yeah.
There are.
Could that be under entertainment?
Toll bridges.
First, do we have any toll bridges yet? Yeah, we do. That's right. Mm-hmm.
You bet.
Transportation.
Could we put could you say you could say tolls after toll. Transportation, you know.
And isn't telephone service included in public commodities of a public utility nature?
Well, and that sure is. That's a commodity. That's why I was a good idea to list it separately. I thought of using communications services. But you've got the saving clause in there, but not limited to it. And I really question whether a telephone service falls into the category of public utility, such as your gas and electricity.
I'm having the same trouble with whether what you get at a restaurant is an accommodation, since you get both service in the sense of labor and so forth, but you also get a commodity that is the food.
Well, you got yeah.
And I don't know if that's an accommodation. I don't know.
Well, is it an accommodation to serve you food?
But is it, what about the food itself? This is what's going on.
Dave, I mean, yes.
Go out yourself.
The waiter could criminally charge you for failing to tip him, because that's an accommodation. No.
It seems to be an accommodation in a hotel, though, other than the hot water. You leave intact. You leave the facility intact, or you're guilty of some other kind of crime. In a restaurant, you may leave the facility intact, but you have consumed a commodity on the premises. Generally, like the debated this earlier.
Services includes but not limited to labor, professional services, transportation. Well, why don't you say supplying of food? I frankly like the language that presently appears in the Oregon innkeeper statute, but it's, I mean, in this sense, in this limited sense, any person who with intent to defraud obtains food, lodging, or other accommodations at any hotel, apartment house, inn, boarding house, etc. But I mean, what I like about it is the obtains food, lodging, or other accommodations. That covers,
well, now, accommodation in restaurants, now that's consistent throughout the Model Penal Code, the New York draft, and the Michigan draft. They've all used that language, and I, not that that necessarily makes it good, it's just that it would seem to me that accommodation in hotels would be broad enough to cover, or accommodation in a restaurant would be broad enough to cover whatever you get in a restaurant, which is logically going to be food and drink.
Part of your restaurant Part of your restaurant tab is accommodation, and part of it is the commodity. It's about half and half. I can't think of anyone that isn't about half and half.
Well, I think what bothers me is that just doesn't seem to me to be a proper use of the word accommodation to include it in such things as food. Now, maybe I'm being
you don't think that it's going to rest and get some accommodation.
But about half of it is the services you get, and the other half is the commodity.
Put it on your tab, on your bill, and then skip off without paying your hotel bill. You would be covered under this, certainly, I would think, serving you the food in the hotel restaurant would be part of the accommodation of the hotel.
Well, if you don't stay in the hotel, you just go under restaurant. If it's part of the total bill is accommodation, then doesn't that cover it sufficiently? That's the question. That's part of each restaurant ticket or bill or whatever you want to call it is the service that they render. It must be, or they couldn't exist.
Sure, there's a part of margins in there.
Yes.
I don't know if this helps me or doesn't help me with my point, but the definition given was lodging and sometimes food.
Well, how about, what would you think of this? After the supply and of, we could put food, comma, lodgings, or. Would be this or other. Supplying of food, lodging, or other accommodations.
That would take care of it.
That's like in, right. Yeah.
Or do you want drink in there, too?
Well, I think maybe other accommodations
may come with. You don't want to make that a crime.
Food, comma, lodging?
Supplying of food, comma, lodging.
Or other. Yeah, let's do that.
That's right. Or other. Or other. Okay. All in favor?
Alright.
Or other accommodations. Would it not be better if we said, food, lodging, or other accommodations added, in hotels, restaurants, or elsewhere, the way the current statute reads, at any hotel, from a drafting standpoint, which is better, Kathleen?
Well, when you get or elsewhere in there,
you have to defer.
Why do you have to? Just say supplying of food, lodging, or other accommodations skipped in hotels, restaurants, or elsewhere.
Well, it seems to me that you need that in there to indicate
what
the type of facility that you're talking about.
Food and other accommodations cover sufficiently.
I think so.
Supposing we get a mistake in the matter. Drinks. Is that food? Other accommodations?
I think that would cover it.
Yeah.
If we say supply of food, lodging, or other accommodations in hotels, restaurants, or elsewhere, that cover?
Mm-hmm.
Tourist park, picnic grounds, entertainment, supply of equipment for use.
Does it have to be for use? Question I'm concerned with. Supplying of equipment, do you care whether the guy uses it or not? Equipment is generally intended to perform some functions.
Well,
so I have to have for use in it.
I think that it might be valuable from this standpoint, for use as opposed to for keeps. In other words, supposing that you obtain the sale of a piece of equipment by deception. That would amount, the vendor selling this to you would amount to supplying you with the equipment.
But the word, if that's what the phrase for use is supposed to help you on, it isn't the meaning I got out of it at all. So, don't I buy equipment for use?
Maybe.
Or to use it. That's the meaning I gave to the phrase, Don. Now that may be a misreading of it.
Buy equipment for resale?
Well, you could, but I mean, the phrase for use didn't help me as a theory. Well, you're thinking of that.
That's what my interpretation of
it. Great service is out of
it. Yeah, in other words, to use and return. In other words,
you're talking about, I still don't see the point on the necessity, on what we're trying to cover, supplying equipment for use. Simply make it for me again.
Well,
what specific situation are we trying to cover?
We're trying not to cover sale of equipment or something more than a temporary providing of that equipment, isn't it?
At the same time, right, while we're discussing that, what harm does it do to have it?
Now, the Model Penal Code uses the language use of vehicles or other movable property.
That seems to me to represent a different meaning than what you have written when you say supplying them for use. But then maybe I'm
servicing the food.
Well, of course, when you're talking about the theft of the service, what is the service? The service amounts to the supplying of it, isn't it? Rather than the... Yeah, I think that's what it's aimed at.
I rent first trucks, and you come in and you bail yourself my service. You rent a truck or a car, and then you use it. With intent to avoid payment therefore. Are you guilty of theft services there? No, you've come more under the misappropriation of property that we covered in the
previous. We already talked about that the other.
Yeah. I just can't crystallize. I just might be dense today, but I just can't put my finger on what we're trying to, on the specific problem that we're trying to solve by putting it in there.
Well, really, what I'm trying to say is the supplying equipment for use. For use by the person supplying.
You mean like a telephone? It covers that.
Well, I was thinking as much in terms of that type of equipment.
That's just a definition.
Or this protection section.
Tractor?
Or I think vehicles would be the most common type of situation. Abbey Rents type of situation. It might not be a vehicle. They supply you with equipment to use it.
Yeah, we passed a special.
You use it, you don't pay for it. You may not keep the equipment, but you don't pay for the use of it.
What's the special statute that was passed in 1965 for? Well, actually, it was some Eugene rental agencies that wanted that statute passed.
That misdemeanor statute on families.
Yeah.
But I thought that we were getting to that problem in our general consolidated theft section.
Yes, but that's a situation where you don't return the property, isn't it? Isn't that what you're talking about?
What people would do is they'd say, well, I intend to return. And then they'd keep it another month. And then they'd call up and say, oh, I intend to return. They never paid for it.
So you see, there's a different problem.
Right. You see, there the equipment itself has not been returned. You see?
Now we're talking about service.
But supposing you use the thing, you don't keep it. But you never pay for the use of it.
I see.
Yeah, run an automobile and take it back when you're supposed to and say, here's your automobile to buy.
Well, the only way most people will charge you for a certain month's rent, all right, then you do two more months, and then you take it back. Now that'll be a theft of services under this, and that's what we're talking about here. You're not supplying the equipment for resale, you're supplying it for use. I think that's what he's getting at. Unless you can find some place where they cover it elsewhere.
Do you think that would be better?
I think the thing that misled me on that is that I didn't give it any of the reading of for use that you are giving to it. It never occurred to me that's what you meant, and that kind of concerns me whether you want to consider me, you know, the low-level audience that should understand these statutes or not. That I missed the meaning that far. So.
Well. What did you think it meant, Kathleen, in the first instance?
Well, I just thought it was a kind of a redundancy. What else would I have equipment for? I didn't even think of its resale, but to use it. If I rent a lawnmower, I intend to use it. If I buy one, I intend to use it. You know, and so I wasn't reading for use as being a limitation of the.
Well, what you're really talking about is the temporary supplying evidence. It's supposed to come back.
Yeah. This is. And you just haven't had it covered, as we found out very well. In 1965, it was pretty well discussed then, and you just about have some means of obtaining payment.
It's the thought that is now in our Terry writing statute, and taking, using an automobile without intent to steal.
This is taking and using a subject without intent to pay for its use, which is different from the withholding of property for so extended a period or under such circumstances that the major part of its benefit is lost, of its economic value is lost to the owner.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a distinction. And now I see it.
But I can see the other idea too, that for use really isn't the whole thing. You can supply it just because the guy wants to have it. But he's supposed to bring it back, and it should still be just as bad.
He can use it or not use it, it doesn't matter. You supply it before you use it.
Yeah.
But could you say the supplying of equipment or of commodity,
commodity.
Well, what I'm trying to do is cut out the second supply. assuming that we agree that we should keep the supply of equipment.
Oh.
And say, the supply of equipment.
For use.
Well, I was thinking about that for you.
I would like to suggest, I realize this is not exactly not what you're talking about, but this is just on the top of the head, so to speak. But looking at the definition of work, for instance, in this dictionary, in contrast to the definition of the word labor, that none of this is feasible in a definition of this kind of statute to say that instead of providing work labor, that you provide work, which by this definition I would take it to mean includes physical, mental effort, labor task. I mean, but it's on here where it includes the work of a machine.
You mean?
I think that would then be subject to some argument, though, as to what they intended.
Well, I'm just wondering, this is just a shot in the dark. When you're talking about something so nebulous as this, what is wrong with taking a definition as, we'll say, just for example, Webster's Seventh New Collegiate Dictionary?
Say what?
That you will say services means service as it is defined in Webster's Seventh New Collegiate Dictionary, which includes a whole lot of things in here. I'm just saying this shot in the dark.
That would be quite a departure from any standard.
But I can see three of these, and I have to harp back to this, but it's not limited to Fred.
About when everybody's presumed to know the law, they presume to have that particular body in the dictionary.
When you run into a problem of unlawful legislative delegation,
not just the specific edition, if you just said services as defined in Webster's dictionary, it could change as the editor, but if you fit it to the specific edition, I think you've got that definition.
What bothers me is when you say services includes. That is not a definition. What else does it include?
Of course, that's the same thing that we started out at initially in our definition of theft, and that's the way, like we said, obtain includes.
There's a lot of property.
Yeah, our property. Includes, and then we varied from that and said deprive means, and we said appropriate means, and owner of property means. So we use one or the other, includes or means.
And they do have, I mean, one of them is a limited definition, the other one is the one called
right.
The court to interpret the
right.
Generic.
Right. I think it almost has to. Be defined in an inclusive sort of way. Services mean, but I can see the point that you make, and it's a point that's valid, and this is a subject that's pretty disturbing. Let's start right at the beginning again, and. Let me ask you this. So anybody that would be averse to inserting the word tolls, T-O-L-L-S, after transportation, so that we can pick up the present oriented statute proscribing...
You mean after the comma?
Yeah, after the comma. Or any place else in there. So that it would read at least that far, as used in this section, services includes, but is not limited to, labor, professional services, transportation, tolls, telephone, service, comma, supply of food, lodging, or other accommodations in hotels, restaurants, or elsewhere, comma, entertainment, comma. Now, can we agree that at least that far, this is not objectionable? Services is including that, and then we go and we say a person commits theft if with intent to avoid payment, therefore, he obtains services that are available only for compensation by threat, deception, or other means. And the guy that refused to pay the toll would fall within the purview of that.
And still even services.
Is the toll the service though, or is the toll facility the service?
The toll is what you pay.
In other words, would it be really technically accurate to say that services, or that a toll is a service, or is a toll what you pay for the service?
Yeah.
Yeah, the toll.
Well, how about something like that? Toll facilities.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's splitting north to northwest, you know. I think it's a minor point.
Well, we can leave it out.
We
have to have tolls. It's a specific problem, right here.
I don't know whether.
Are you sure? It was put in the Oregon statute.
And of course, in the days, I know. While it was put in there.
For the Vancouver Bridge.
Right, and there were a tremendous number of people crossing.
Putting washers in the.
Right. And we have a situation on the Astoria Bridge now, and of course there's a lot of people to Dallas, Maryhill, Newmanville.
I thought that one was free. You're off. The last time I went across, I did without a toll.
Where it?
Maybe there's a warrant coming in.
I wasn't even aware that we had any toll bridges still in operation.
Bridge of the Gods, Hood River.
Don doesn't leave the state very often.
That's right. At least not by toll bridge.
So it's toll facility.
Toll facility.
Well, this draft is going to be subject to revision.
Yes, I'm sure it is.
Maybe the next time, Bob Chandler will be here and I'll be sick.
Why open it?
All right.
Well, is that your motion?
All right, my motion is toll facility, tentatively.
After
transportation.
That's singular toll facility, IT mark.
No. Sir.
All right, yes.
Okay.
Let's put the, it uses like services includes, but it's not limited to labor, professional services, toll facilities, and then transportation, telephone service. A supply of food, lodging, or other accommodations at hotels, restaurants, or elsewhere. Entertainment, the supplying of equipment, and we agreed to leave the poor use in or to take it out.
I don't think we decided that.
No, we didn't. I haven't convinced we could leave it out.
All right.
Well, what would you think of the use of equipment?
Yeah, that's better.
That's better.
Yeah.
Okay. The use.
Let's see.
The use of equipment. And the use of commodities of a public utility nature. Rather than fine, make it consistent. I make this motion in recognizing that I can't walk across the Red Sea dry shod. As used in this section, services includes but is not limited to labor, professional services, toll facilities, transportation, telephone service, the supplying of food, lodging, or other accommodations in hotels, restaurants, or elsewhere, entertainment, the use of equipment.
Well, the supplying of equipment. I don't even know where to supply.
Well, yeah, that's what I intended, but.
Really,
you
need to
be
not supplying.
Oh, yeah. Well, in other words, you mean the supplying of the use? Is that what you're saying?
Supplying equipment for use is really what you're doing.
Yeah, well, that's what I was trying to say.
That's what you're doing. You're supplying equipment for use.
Well, I think that's better. Supplying of equipment for use and supplying of commodities of public utility nature, such as gas, electricity, steam, and water. Period.
One minute.
All right.
I think telephone should be stricken, and we should include communications. Does communication service mean include then telephone and telegraph and something? I think that's what we need. I think that's what we want to do. Whether that's the right word.
The way that the model penal code in Michigan approached that is telephone or other public services.
Whatever.
Now, is that redundant with public utilities and recovery labels?
Yeah.
Well, if you're making a distinction between telephone or communication service and commodities,
that are public yeah, we have. Services, then it should be pretty clear what is telephone service or communication service. I think we have a political problem here, though. I think we've got to almost put that word telephone in there Why don't we say telephone or other public service and then go on down?
Other public service or other communication service?
All right, or other communication service. Is that agreeable?
Yes.
Mr. Spaulding?
Mm-hmm.
So moved. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Subsection 3.
Rendering or supplying, when you say, a compensation for services or the paid upon rendering or supplying of it. Render it.
Are they synonymous? I render you a day's work for a day's wage, I supply you a day's work.
Yeah, but you don't render me a truck for use.
Would receiving help and change the focus?
Yeah, that eliminates some words.
Where compensation for services is ordinarily paid upon their receipt. How about that?
So does that mean signing a receipt or
upon the receipt, upon the
It seems like you can just say upon the receiving of them.
Well, that's okay too. That's okay. Upon the receiving of them, as in the case of hotels, restaurants, and the like, would be as in the case of hotel service, so restaurant services.
But do we want the word absconding to apply to all those things? What we mean is just not paying for it.
No, that's not it. It's not, do we?
No.
Failure to pay.
Mm-hmm. Or offer to pay is not going to pay for it.
And this, of course, relates here to the innkeeper, the taxi cab driver, the restaurant operator. Doesn't relate to the failure to pay your gas bill.
Yeah, because on your gas bill, services are not ordinarily paid upon receiving.
Right. Of course, yeah, now absconding, of course, has a definite meaning. I think absconding means more than just not paying.
Yeah, it means not getting out of there.
Yeah.
Hiding. But that is, you don't intend to limit this, do you? That's what guy receives. The use of a piece of equipment. He doesn't pay when he's supposed to pay. That's what you're talking about, isn't it?
Right. Now the language in the present statute, 165.230, which is the defrauding an innkeeper statute, paragraph D of subsection 2 states that one of the instances where it's prima facie evidence of fraudulent intent is the person absconded without paying or offering to pay for such food, lodging, or other accommodation.
What are the other instances of prima facie?
Lodging, food, or other accommodations were obtained by false pretense or by false or fictitious show or pretense of any baggage or other properties. The person refused or neglected to pay for such food, lodging, or other accommodation on demand. The person may be worthy of payment for such food, lodging, or other accommodation, any check or draft on which payment was refused, the person absconded without payment, or the person surreptitiously removed or attempted to remove his baggage. And as I indicated in the commentary, this is not really as broad as the prima facie provisions of the draft are not as broad as we've got in our present law.
No, they're not.
By a long shot.
But
it seems to me where the instances where you need such a provision to make the act prima facie evidence of a fraudulent intent is where the individual has absconded.
If we're covering, Dr. Smith, in our draft, we're covering something much broader than just defrauding a taxicab driver, and particularly with regard to the equipment question. And if we accept this prima facie application, it would be only in the instance where a guy physically absconded or took off that you could make you it would be a prima facie case. But maybe that's the way it should be, rather than
I'm not so sure that it shouldn't be. Because without it, you're going to be able to prosecute a guy for not paying water bill.
Right. Right.
You know, the model penal code says
for debt.
Right. Right. If he absconds, this is something else than just failure to pay. And I think, you agree, didn't you?
Not yet.
Except that there's a defense there on the water bill where the compensation for services ordinarily paid upon receiving them. You don't ordinarily pay your water if it comes out of the mountain.
So that wouldn't.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't. So that would be applicable here anyway.
Now, actually, our draft doesn't go as far as either New York or Michigan. They make refusal to pay prima facie evidence, not just absconding.
We're going to make this work with us a fine equipment for use car, but and you're going to have to just use failure to pay, I think. Because a fellow can be, within immediate range, and you can still be using your equipment. You can still be using your services without without absconding.
Yeah, that's a little bit more than ordinary debt because
that isn't debt. That isn't evading debt. No, that's nothing like it.
Well, that's getting the use of it, but
it's a fraudulent use of somebody's equipment. Doesn't have a right to do it.
Well, now, let's talk about the equipment for a minute. For compensation for services is ordinarily paid upon receiving the income. And we have the equipment. Does that turn on a case-by-case basis? If I get it from ABC Rentals and I pay them when I get it, then it has application here, but if I get it from XYZ Rentals and they bill me at the end of the month, it doesn't have application.
Now, I wonder whether it really has an application in either of those instances. I think what they're trying to do in all of these drafts, by using the language hotels, restaurants, and the like, they're trying to limit this. And that's what I was trying to do, to limit it to that type of situation.
So we aren't really trying to include all of this.
No, I wasn't trying to do that. And I don't think these other drafts are either, because now the Model Penal Code says where compensation for service is ordinarily paid immediately upon the rendering of such service, as in the case of hotels and restaurants.
Then in that event, the use of the verb render was more appropriate than receiving.
I think so,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, really should.
You start receiving it when in a hotel.
The New York draft says, with respect to their section on restaurant services, etc., a person who fails or refuses to pay for such services is presumed to have intended to avoid payment, therefore. Michigan uses the language, for compensation for services is ordinarily paid immediately upon the rendering of them, as in the case of hotels, restaurants, and the like. Absconding without payment or offer to pay is prima facie evidence under subparagraph 1 that the services were obtained by deception.
And these others, okay, so we're dealing, we take care of the accommodations in hotels, restaurants, and so forth. then how do you establish a prima facie case in the other? What is a prima facie case then of illegal, yeah, of theft of gas, electricity, steam, water, etc. Equipment, what have you.
Well, I wasn't water communication. I wasn't intending that any act with respect to these other services would raise a prima facie case.
Well, then, you just then aren't you providing for imprisonment for a plain debt?
You mean as it's drafted here under 3?
Yeah, if you don't require any act such as is found in to have a prima facie case. If subdivision 3 does not apply to things like buying equipment, you just don't pay your gas bill at the end of the month and you're guilty, aren't you?
Oh, no. No, I wouldn't say that at all.
Why not?
Well, for one thing, 3 is would strengthen the prosecution's case in those instances where you'd normally be expected to pay for the services at the time that they're rendered. But you would have a weaker case against your individual there because the prima facie provision would not apply.
And the defense.
So he would be better off then.
And his defense would be, all right, I didn't pay, but I intended to pay, and therefore I'm not within the purview of 1, which says with intent to avoid payment, I obtained. Is that what you're saying? My defense would be, all right, I didn't pay, but I intended to pay. And so therefore you can't find me guilty. And there's no criteria respecting the prima facie showing.
What you're trying to get at is...
Ask Scott if you give us the definition of the only case you can find defining authority would say that if you walked out the front door openly, the prima facie case is not established, but if you went out the back door and through the men's room window, because they do define it using the emphasis on the word clandestine or stealth. Delaney holds that section was intended in part to protect, in those particular instances, the hotel and the restaurant, so for the proprietors who ran out and snatched the guy by the shirt tail against false arrests.
Well,
if you walked out the front door without paying, I had an immediate prima facie case that you were trying to commit theft and therefore was justified in my effort to detain you.
Well, I think the purpose of it. I think the purpose of it in 165.230, where you raise presumption or indicate there's prima facie evidence, just as in the our present check statute, withdrawing a bank check on insufficient funds, you have a prima facie provision in there. And I think that the purpose of it is because those kind of crimes are committed by persons who are likely to bug out, and you're going to have a tough time having grounds to arrest them otherwise. On short notice, but I think if you've got an individual who has left without paying, that you're in a position to at least have probable cause to arrest him.
Well, but
and it would protect your
right. You just said that parts are each instead of Abscond.
Well, I was trying to answer your question. You didn't ask the question about Abscond, I don't think.
That's my other one.
But I think, although it would certainly be protection for the proprietor, I don't think that's the purpose of it. I don't think that's what it's in there for. I think it's in there because these are the kind of situations where the individual is likely to be gone before you can do anything about it.
Well,
I don't know.
I wonder this. We run into the problem that we have because we're trying to lump so many things together in the under the definition of services. And I don't say that's bad. I think this is what we should strive toward. However, it occurs to me that the language which is in the present already statute in this regard is good, but I can't see any reason why.
You know,
proof of any of the following acts is prima facie evidence of fraudulent intent mentioned in subsection 1 of this section. Logic under accommodation, I would say, we could polish that, were obtained by false pretense. That is, I come in and rent some equipment and I say, I operate a ranch over such and such a place, or whatever, and this was a false representation. I didn't. Two, the person refused or neglected to pay for such food, lodging, or other accommodation on demand. And I think that's kind of important. Three, gave a false check, false payment of the food. Four, absconded without payment. And then the other one is surreptitiously removed, attempted to remove his bag. I don't think that's necessary. Maybe it is. But some derivation on this particular phraseology could be made as inclusive and probably render more protection.
Oh, yeah, it renders more protection, I think. It makes a lot tougher on the defendant. I think
more protection for who?
More protection from the standpoint of the prosecution. I mean, wouldn't you agree that the defrauding innkeeper language that's in there now is much more severe than what's in any of these drafts?
I don't know.
I mean, this depends on what you're trying to accomplish here. If you want to make it more enforceable or easier to enforce, sure, you can make these presumptions a lot stricter.
Well,
don't you really need two statutes? Don't you really need this? So you're talking about the ordinary innkeeper statute, and then these other services, such as the telephone service, and what we're really talking about is the telephone service and gas electricity is where they illegally tap into the line, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You're talking about not paying the bill.
Yeah, I think we're getting close to writing this, that the prosecutor's not paying the bill.
Yeah, that looks to me like we've got a difficult drafting problem.
If he didn't intend to pay for it, he left the gas. And you prove that by showing that he hasn't been paying his bill for the last year.
Yeah. Of course, the problem with this language about public utilities is trying to get at is the individual who goes out and bypasses the main and
right.
Comes in.
Yeah.
And,
right.
It's not designed to make it a crime not to pay your water bill.
Okay. But you still need to be, what is a prima facie case of that? And how do you differentiate between that and not paying your bill? And have we done it here?
Well, of course, my point is you're not helping the guy who doesn't pay his bill by putting in a statute. It's going to be a prima facie case and you can't be
no.
Wrong. I mean, the guy, the consumer is going to be much better off under this draft the way it is now than you would be if you enlarge this prima facie section to include all these others. And I certainly didn't intend to do that.
What would you have said, Doug? Just like you have, except hotels, restaurants, taxi cabs, and the like.
As a matter of fact, it might be better to make it crystal clear that we don't want to expand the prima facie provisions to these other sections, but just to limit it to the
The compensation for services is usually paid upon the rendering of them. As in the case of, as in the case of a hotel, comma, restaurant, comma, taxi cab, comma, or the like, comma, absconding without payment or offer to pay, without absconding without payment after demand. Or offer pay as private paycheck. Think
if I were
hand in there.
If I were the under this debt, under this, if I were the owner of one of these other services, such as public utility, I just put it at the top of my bill. Due and collectible on receipt of this bill. Then what would you do? Would the district attorney have to prosecute if you didn't pay your bill?
Well, I sure as hell hope not.
Well, if you can envision some Sharpie business manager you're doing that, though, can't you?
A lot of people use the word absconding.
Of course, there's one other thing we could do with this. We could eliminate this thing completely, the prima facie provisions. We could take it out completely. Because it was to assist in enforceability of the provisions and to get at the one who would skip out. And
I think the point Kathleen made was pretty legitimate, that the reason we had this prima facie thing built into it was to protect the proprietor and seize the guy, protect him from any civil liability, as for the same reason we had this complicated language built into the shoplifting statute. It seems to me that to take it out, we create a problem for ourselves, because we have the restaurants, the hotel, motel owner, apartment house owners, associations coming down mass.
I wasn't advocating to take it out. I was just raising that as a possibility. I think it ought to be in there myself, but
well, to do it, don't you have to make, you have to split it out somehow, don't you?
You have to do what?
Is this sufficient?
So that it doesn't apply to your gas bill?
Yeah, right. But still, I'm still back on that problem. I don't see.
No, I don't think it applies to your gas bill, Ed. Because you don't ordinarily pay your gas bill upon the rendition of the service, do you? I mean, your gas is coming in continuously. And that's a different continuously. And that's a different situation from taxi cab ride, where it was finished, you're expected to pay.
No question about that.
So I've been doing a lot of talking, but and roaming all over the barnyard here, but. I think it's narrow, or it's sufficiently limited to achieve the objective that you want.
Well, let me ask Jeff just slowing down. If you were sitting on a case and the prosecution attempted to raise a prima facie case on the basis that the individual had absconded without paying his gas bill, for example, and you read this language says for compensation for services is ordinarily paid upon the rendering of them or receiving, if we use that word, as in the case, particularly this language, as in the case of hotels, restaurants, and the like, would you in interpret that language to include a situation of leaving without paying or absconding without paying your gas bill?
Well, I think it could be claimed because we don't say, I suppose it's had the words where compensation starts is ordinarily immediate to pay. But you are expected to pay for practically any kind of service.
Sometime.
Sometime. And you may receive it daily or you may receive it monthly. I don't know how any different that would be in an apartment house where you pay your rental by the month. See, the television is rather than it comes to your house and fixes your repairs your television and stuff. Or you leave your shoes at the shoe repair place. Or watch at the watch repair place. And I suppose in a department store there are many types of functions they perform that are a service, not in a sense, not for supplying what gear
they say. Yeah, good.
Well, you think that immediately, would you think that would improve it?
Well, it may. Immediately upon receiving. But see, ordinarily, I suppose that's no more difficult than finding the intent and purpose and so forth. 100 or 1,000 other things of this kind. But what is ordinarily done depends greatly on the nature of the customer. Credit to, he doesn't expect payment when he delivers the goods. But if it is one that